Do you ever find yourself getting nervous before you're going out on a date? Or if you're in a relationship, maybe feeling anxious before you're going out to some social event? Social anxiety affects most of us at some point, and it can get in the way of our really enjoying life as fully as we should be. So today we're going to be exploring social anxiety and what you can do about it. And before we get started, press subscribe. And if you want to find out more about how you can find or improve your relationships, head over to therelationshipmaze.com. Welcome to today's podcast. And today I'm going to be talking about social anxiety. Social anxiety does affect most people, whether it's only mild or whether it's more severe. But social anxiety, for many people, it stops them really enjoying life. It stops them being able to live the life that they want to. Social anxiety can keep people staying at home on their own, so they don't go and date, they don't go and interact. It can be really problematic. Social anxiety may be experienced at work. We experience anxiety in many forms, where you're going to make a presentation at work, and that can be so challenging. So as we get started with today's podcast, first of all, take a minute to think, are there any situations where you find yourself feeling anxious in particularly social situations? Or maybe you know somebody who finds it very difficult going into social situations. And we can think about social anxiety in two different ways. We can think about it in terms of shyness. And shyness refers usually to when we're feeling nervous, or when we're feeling timid interacting with other people. Whereas social anxiety expands even more fully. So that expands to where we feel that we're being observed by others. Even when you're walking down the street, or maybe you're kind of going into a room, even a doctor's surgery, and you feel other people maybe are watching you. Or you're going on a date and you're sitting in a restaurant and you think other people around are kind of observing you and maybe judging you. Also, social anxiety, we can experience it when we're performing in front of other people. Like, you know, if you're making a presentation at work, or even when you're introducing yourself in front of a group of people, sometimes you get those nerves, you feel that social anxiety. And this type of anxiety can really cause a problem in people's lives. You may have experienced it yourself, or you may know people who don't live the life that they want to because they feel that anxiety stops them. Now, in order to do something about social anxiety, the first thing is it can help to understand where the anxiety comes from. And anxiety is actually often produced by two parts of the brain. So we can have a cognitive response, cognitive anxious response, or a more automatic anxious response. So we have two different parts of the brain. So first of all, let's talk about the amygdala. And the amygdala is basically a part of a brain that responds automatically based on what we experience in the environment. So if that's like an automatic response, you go into a room and you experience this feeling, and we're not even having to think. We haven't got thoughts going on in our mind. We automatically feel anxiety. We also have a more cognitive response, which is to do with the cortex. And that's when we have anxiety based on what we're thinking about. So you can imagine that you're doing a presentation the next day and that everything's going wrong and you feel that anxiety. So there's two different types of anxiety that we experience, or two different ways that we experience it because of those different parts of the brain that process what's going on. We have that automatic response from the amygdala and the more the response from the cortex, which is based on what we think about. Now, in order to understand anxiety, it's also helpful to understand that there are three different components in our anxious response. So we have a physiological response. So our heart rate might go up, the blood might get diverted from our digestive system through to our muscles. And that's why sometimes when you're feeling anxious, you may find that your stomach basically starts to behave differently, that you may kind of find that you get constipated, or you may need to go to the loo more often. And that's a physiological response. You might get headaches. We also have the cognitive and emotional response. And essentially, this is often based on our accurate or more frequently inaccurate risk appraisal. So when we go into a situation, we start to kind of think, you know, what might be the potential risks? And we basically evolved as a species to look for risk because that's how we survived. So we often judge things if there's potentially a risk, we see that risk there. Then we have the behavioural component, and that's essentially what we do as a result of it. So we may avoid situations, or we may have some sort of ritual we have to perform in order to feel comfortable, like wearing a lucky t-shirt or doing something before you go into a situation. So these are the three different components to do with anxiety. And what you might like to do now is just think about a situation where you felt anxious. So take a moment and think about a situation where you felt anxious and start to identify those three components. So have a think about when you went into that situation, what was the physiological response? What did you notice, like your heart rate going up? Did you notice yourself breathing quicker? What was the cognitive and emotional response? Like how did you feel and what were you saying to yourself or what were you picturing in your mind? And your behavioural response, was there something that you did? Did you avoid a situation? Did you do something to try and cover up that response? Sometimes people, if they're going to certain situations, like a social situation, they might do something like wear dark glasses or put headphones on, because it's a way of kind of trying to hide some of the things that are going on. It's a way of kind of just covering that response up. Where does anxiety come from? Well, basically, our brains evolved to be anxious because it's all about survival. So hundreds of years ago, or thousands of years ago, before we had all the kind of modern technology that we have now, survival was much more challenging. You know, there were many different dangers. We could get attacked by animals. We could get attacked by other people. So essentially, our brains evolved to be anxious because we needed to see danger. So genetically, we've got that predisposition. So is that part in terms of how we've evolved? In terms of genes as well, there may be a genetic component. So if your parents tended to be anxious, it may be there is a genetic component. Probably more frequently, though, it's to do with maybe childhood in terms of how we observed our parents or life events. So if you had situations in the past that were challenging, like, for example, at school, when you did a presentation and people laughed at you, then it's quite natural that we'll have learned to feel anxious in that type of situation. There may be things to do with our general lifestyle where we kind of experience anxiety. So, you know, maybe we have health problems, or maybe it's to do with not being fit enough. Alcohol and drugs is another source where sometimes people will kind of try to cover up anxiety through using substances. And unfortunately, what it does in the long term is it makes it worse. You might feel an immediate benefit, or you might think there's a benefit in the short term, but in the long term, it actually makes the anxiety a lot worse. So naturally, what we do when we have anxiety is we tend to go into safety mode. And I wonder if you can think of some of that sort of safety mode that you go into if you have anxiety. And there are often two ways that it's exhibited, which is hiding behaviours and avoiding behaviours. So hiding behaviours might be, well, wearing headphones in a situation like when you're at the bus stop because you get anxiety about potentially someone talking to you or having to talk to someone else. So we find that way of kind of avoiding that situation or kind of hiding. It could even be sunglasses, like we hide our eyes because we don't want to have that situation where we think people are watching us where we kind of feel that people might be thinking that we're looking at them. Also, avoiding behaviours is where we might avoid a situation. So, you know, if there was a party on that evening, you might avoid it. You might kind of think, well, yeah, I'm not going to go because of my social anxiety. And, you know, this can be problematic, which is, you know, we might think, well, you know, the people there, they're not going to be interested in talking to me because I'm boring. And as a result, what happens is we end up feeling frustrated. And because we feel that way as well, if we do go to a situation, you may not talk to the other people. And as a result, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because we don't interact, we don't engage. We believe people won't like us. And as a result, because we don't engage, because we have that fear, sometimes the thing that we fear most actually gets manifested. Whenever we avoid situations, whenever we avoid something, whenever we hide our behaviours, essentially, it has costs. So it restricts our life. So this is problematic. And I wonder right now if you're aware of any situations where you have this pattern of behaviour, where maybe you hide a behaviour because you're kind of anxious about it. Maybe you do something in certain situations, like when you're going out socially, you like to have a glass of wine in your hand, or you have to smoke a cigarette because you have to do something with your hand. It's like some sort of safety behavior that you do. So have a think about when you find these sort of safety behaviors going on in your own life, and what are the costs? Now, naturally, we do actually, as humans, have what's called a negativity bias. We tend to remember negative things more than the positive. So if you have a think about, like, over the last few days, what are some situations that stand out for you? For most people, the first things that come to mind are going to be some of the more negative things. And that's because of this negativity bias. And essentially, this again comes from our evolution. Because that part of our brain that I talked about earlier, called the amygdala, it evaluates events and decides whether there's a threat. And it essentially reacts more rapidly to negative events than positive events, because this is about survival. So the negative information, as a result, it gets people's attention faster than positive. We see this in terms of the things that we see in the media, that, you know, often around us, we get fascinated by some of the negative information, things in the news, because we've got this negativity bias. And what's really useful is, at the end of a day, just a little exercise, is to actually sit down and write down three positive things that happened to you during the day. Because what we want to do is we want to change that negativity bias. Start to change the way we frame our day, the things that we pay attention to. And you can do this. It takes practice. So one little exercise is, at the end of each day, just get out a notebook and write down three positive things that happened to you. They could be small things. It could just be someone smiled at you. It could be that someone said something nice to you. Whatever it might be, write down three positive things that happened to you in the day. Now, this is really useful as well, because the way that we think tends to become a habit. So the more you think in certain ways, if you tend to think in negative ways, it becomes more habitual, because the brain has this amazing feature which is called neuroplasticity, is that essentially habitual thoughts fire the same neural circuitry, and as a result, those patterns get strengthened. So the more we tend to focus on the negative, the more that becomes almost solidified into the way that our brain functions. With practice, you can change that. This neuroplasticity means that your brain can change. So that's really important to know, is that you don't have to think like many people that I've met in the past, where they think, well, they're just a negative person. You can change that, but it takes practice. In terms of social anxiety, we have a reactive route and we have a thought route. The reactive route, as mentioned, is where the amygdala responds. And this is a very fast response. It's faster than the thoughts. It's a part of our brain that's evolved to deal with danger, to deal with threats. And that part of our brain, it learns by instinct. It learns through emotional memories. So when you were a child, like say when you were four, if you got bitten by an animal, a particular animal, 20 years later, you might see that animal and have an automatic feeling of fear. And it's not something you have to think about. You have automatically that feeling because the amygdala has learned that there's a potential threat. This type of response, again, is really important to realize when we have this instinctive response, where it's not our thoughts that's making us feel a fear. It's just it kicks in almost by itself. And one of the ways to deal with this type of response is, first of all, awareness. We need to be aware that we are responding automatically, aware that we've learned through experience. You don't have to remember necessarily what the experience is, but what's really useful is to remind yourself that your body, your brain, is trying to protect you, but it can be wrong. So remember that it's trying to protect you, but it can be wrong. Having that awareness, just realizing it's an automatic response, realizing that maybe that's a response that's learned by mistake. maybe from a one-off learning when you're younger. And actually that realization can help you face that situation again in the future. And the great thing is that you can overcome it. In fact, with this type of response, these automatic responses, one of the best ways to overcome it is through a process called systematic desensitization or exposure therapy. Basically, where you start to go into situations where you feel some of this fear or some of this automatic response, and gradually you work up to the things that you're more afraid of, and you'll find that over time you can completely overcome this fear and anxiety. So there's some very effective techniques. We might talk about them more fully in another podcast. But let's move on to the other reactive response, which is basically the thought route. Now, with the thought route, this can operate in two ways. First of all, you can have thoughts that make you anxious. You might think about, well, tomorrow you've got to do a presentation in front of 10 people and you're imagining everything going wrong. And as a result, you feel anxious. So that's where our brain is essentially making up images or making up thoughts. And as a result, we feel anxious. Our body actually responds to what the mind imagines as powerfully as if something had actually happened. That's why, you know, at nighttime, maybe sometimes you've woken up in the middle of the night and you've had a bad dream and your heart's pounding, you're breathing fast, and you feel that sense of fear. Nothing's actually happened, but you've imagined it in your dream. Your body responds to whatever your mind is picturing as if it's real. So if you're imagining something going wrong tomorrow, you're going to get that anxious response. And that's really important to remember is that, you know, that's actually not happening. It's a thought. These are thoughts. It's not reality. So that's one way that the thought route can cause problems. The other thing is your thought route can actually make your amygdala response even worse. So say, for example, you have this automatic sense of fear about something, your thought route might then make it worse. Like, you know, you have heart pounding, your heart racing, and that's like this automatic response. Then your brain starts to come up with these messages saying, you might be having a heart attack, something's going to happen, you know, maybe you're dying. And that actual heart pounding is just that anxious response. It's something that's a natural response to something that had been a threat in the past. But your mind is adding this extra layer where suddenly things get worse and worse. This can be a real challenge. So the cortex can initiate the anxiety by also misinterpreting harmless sensory information. Like, for example, somebody is looking at you and you interpret that look as the fact that they're laughing at you. Yeah, maybe they're sitting far away on a table and you think they're looking at you laughing, and you walk up past them, and as you walk past them, you see they're actually on the phone. They're not actually looking at you. But in your mind, you've misinterpreted it and you felt that anxious response. The way that the brain does this is creating thoughts or images that cause anxiety. So what we want to do is essentially we want to find a different way of dealing with it. And, you know, in terms of that response, common ways of dealing with it that sometimes people learn in some forms of therapy might be you challenge the thought, you might replace the thought, you might try and distract yourself. But a problem is that these approaches often don't work. They might just provide temporary relief, they might require effort, and often it involves focusing on what you don't want to focus on. So this can be problematic because you might think, well, I don't want to have this thought, I don't want to feel anxious. But when you say, I don't want to feel anxious, you have to focus on the anxiety. So another approach, and this is based on a method that we talked about in a previous podcast, is to do with ACT. So this is from acceptance and commitment therapy. And here we want to remember and kind of start to realize that thoughts aren't necessarily the problem themselves, but it's when we, what's called, fuse with them. So it's where we start to believe these thoughts or act in these thoughts as if they're true, as if they're reality. But it's important to remember that you're imagining that presentation going wrong tomorrow is not reality. That's imagined. But the problem is we often take these things as if they're real. In the ACT approach, we look at diffusion, where we start to separate that thought. So where we realize the thought is just a thought. It's just a bunch of images, a bunch of sounds, a bunch of words in our mind. We also want to kind of find ways to start to accept what's going on. So accept that maybe we have thoughts going on, maybe we have feelings of anxiety. At the same time, we're able to engage in the things that are important to us despite any negative feelings or despite negative thoughts. And this can be quite challenging to do, but you can do it with practice. And in the earlier episode of the podcast where we talked about ACT, we probably covered that in a bit more detail. I'm not going to go into too much depth with that today. But the one thing I do want to focus on a little bit is this concept of diffusing from our thoughts. So where we are able to distance ourselves or kind of we realize that we can observe the thoughts. So the thoughts are not us, they're something that our mind is presenting. And these are the thoughts that we may have learned at some point in our life, or thoughts that maybe we've kind of learned through listening to our parents or an experience at school, or many other situations. But when we start to feel a certain way or act as if those things are the reality, that's problematic. These thoughts are things to do with the past or the future. We need to learn to focus more in the present. And one very powerful way of doing that is through mindfulness. So mindfulness is a way to be present in the moment. So as I mentioned, anxiety is where we tend to think about what might go wrong in the future, or we remember something that went wrong in the past and start to kind of rerun this in our minds. Whenever we're doing that, we're not present in the moment. And mindfulness is a way to teach your brain and teach your body, to teach you as a whole, to be present in the moment. And there's some great mindfulness tutorials out there. I think we've even covered some on one of our podcasts. If we haven't, we'll make sure we do quite soon. But mindfulness is a very useful approach. This is where we can also learn to accept our thoughts. We don't have to be happy with them, but we don't have to evaluate them. It's just accepting, well, we've got these thoughts, but they're just thoughts. And one thing that can be really useful to practice is just to reword that thought. So for example, if you're having the thought that, you know, people aren't going to like me, so, you know, it might be difficult to go to the party, add a little bit in front of that and just say, my mind is presenting the thought that people won't like me, or I'm having the thought that people won't like me at the party. You can even add an extra bitterness as well and say, I notice that I'm having the thought that people won't like me. This helps you detach from it. So realizing that that thought is not you, it's part of your experience at the moment. Another way you can do this is to realize that we're constantly telling ourselves stories. So throughout our life, we've learned these stories. Like, for example, I'm unlikable, or kind of I'm boring, or, you know, I'm unlovable. Whenever we notice that we've got this self-talk going on that kind of feeds into that story, just name the story. Name it in a way like, you know, there's that unlovable story. There's that boring story. And try to kind of detach from it. Try to be fairly kind of compassionate to yourself. It's important to be compassionate to yourself, to be kind to yourself. But when you name it as that story, you can start to detach. You can also, and this is challenging, but you can thank your mind, because whatever you're experiencing now, your mind is presenting to you for a reason. And often that may be because it thinks it's trying to protect you. As I mentioned, you know, our brains have evolved to deal with threats, and sometimes it makes a mistake. Even though it feels like something you really want to avoid, you want to push away, sometimes just taking a moment and just thanking your mind for giving you this response, giving you this thought, giving you this feeling, being compassionate to yourself, and maybe acknowledging that at some point, maybe this was a useful response, but it's not necessary now. Everything will be okay. So these are just a few different techniques that may help you detach from some of those thoughts. Dealing with social anxiety is a huge topic, and we'll cover more of it in future podcast episodes. So make sure you subscribe right now if you haven't already to this podcast, so that you can tune in and find more ways to help you deal with it. And if you'd like to find out more about how to find and create the relationship that you really want in your life, and how to build your confidence in relationships and begin to find more insight into what goes on within you, so that you can make changes to create much better relationships in any area of your life, please head over to therelationshipmaze.com, where we have lots of free resources and also our online program, The Relationship Maze. And remember to tune into the next episode. Bye.